Okay. All right, so we're going to try to talk about a number of different things related to Pesach preparations. The main thing will be shopping questions, meaning different types of foods and some of the hashkacha issues that come up specifically in Israel, as opposed to in Chutz Laaretz, where it's a little bit easier to deal with. Here, things are a little confusing, so I'll try to outline some of the different products and some of the questions that come up as we go along. And then if we have time at the end, we'll see if we can go through some other issues, either relating to Erev Pesach preparations or B'digas Chametz, something like that. We'll see what there's time for. Okay. Oh, no, I'm fine. I'm good. Thanks. Thank you. Okay, so basically the main issue here in Israel is that almost everything that you find in stores and most places basically has some sort of hashkach on it that's kosher lePesach. If it's in a Pesach section or if it's before Pesach and you see that it says kosher lePesach, meaning everything you certainly have to check, obviously, because some things are not. But most things that you can find that you're looking to make sure that it's kosher lePesach, most things will say kosher lePesach on them. The problem is, of course, for Ashkenazim in this country that there's a lot of Sfardim, which are usually, Sfardim are wonderful. But the problem is, Sfardim, as we know, eat kidneys on Pesach. Not every single one, but most Sfardim. Right, so that's a different story. Let's say it this way. For people, the packages, the food packages that are giving, and the hashkach organizations that are giving hashkachas, so they're going to say, things that have kidneys in them, they're going to say, l'ochli kidneyot bilvad, which some of you have seen. Which means basically that it's supposed to be for Sfardim, at least Sfardim that eat kidneys. There are some Sfardim that do not eat kidneys. But most don't. Most do, yeah. Some from Morocco, some do not. And I think there's at least one or two other places also that some do not. And there's other random Sfardim. Some of my family that's Sfardi. My brother-in-law, Elad, actually, they don't eat kidneys on Pesach. I'm not sure if it's... I don't think it's their family costume. I think they're just very machmir. This is the one who's works for his father, who's the chief rabbi of Elad, and he also is a rabbi. So their whole family, they don't eat kidneys on Pesach. But most do. And because of that, so you'll have in Israel, you'll have a lot of hashkachas, which will say, for very specific products, lo'ochli kidneyot bilvad, that it's only for people that eat kidneyot. The problem is, of course, that there's a lot of products like that, and sometimes it's hard to know and hard to find things that don't say that. So the question is, and just sometimes you don't remember to look, you have to look at it very carefully. That's one question. Number two is the fact there's a lot of different hashkachas, like there are the rest of the year, but on Pesach, it gets even a little bit more complicated. Number three is the fact that a lot of the Mahadran Ashkachas, especially the Eid HaCharedis, Badats, and some of the other ones, but especially them, they, for some reason, don't like to give Hashkach on Pesach foods. I'm not sure exactly why. I think the reason why is they're just scared. They don't want to get involved in anything which they feel is too complicated. So they have this, I think, this custom that's gone back, I don't know how many years now, but apparently they will only give a Hashkach on Pesach foods that have, less than a certain number of ingredients. Meaning if it has more than 5 or 6 ingredients, they just won't do it. It doesn't matter what's in it. Doesn't matter if it's kosher or not kosher on Pesach, they won't do it. So that creates a lot of problems that products that are generally during the year are under, let's say, the Eid HaCharedis or some of the other hashkachas, on Pesach, they won't certify it. And then you have, you have a hashkacha, but you won't know what to do with it. And you'll have other ones that say, l'ochli kinyan bilvad, but the Eid HaCharedis says it doesn't count for Pesach, and yet it should be fine. So it's hard to know how to deal with all these things. Plus, you have to check the fine print of everything, meaning even things that are kosher lePesach, they'll often say it only in very small letters where it'll be inkjetted on the top and you could barely read it. And then you have to know, when it says kosher lePesach, is it also open kidneyot? And then you have a bunch of other things which we'll go through, terminology that's hard to know exactly how to deal with it. So basically, we'll try to just give a little bit of a summary on some of the different questions that come up and some of the possible ways to deal with it. The other problem, of course, in this country is not a specific hashkacha question in terms of products, but just a general sense of some Ashkenazim in this country feel it's not fair. Why do we have to keep this minhag from 1,000 years ago? It doesn't make sense anymore. And, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's taking over our lives and we should just be like all the Sfardim. So this is also a problem in this country. We'll meet some people like that. I don't know how many, but there are definitely quite a few.
Someone was telling me that there's a lot of rabbanim, like strict rabbanim who are saying that
so I don't think the mainstream Rabbanim don't say that at all. They would say that's absolutely not right. What they may say in certain situations is that certain things which are a bit complex in terms of whether they are included in kidneyot or not, maybe there's room to be more lenient. That's what some of them will say. What do you say? Exactly, yeah. So that's one thing. If I forget to mention it later, please remind me. So that's basically, where also some of it comes from. My response to that is, Just the kidneys is a very special custom. It's been around for 1,000 years in the Ashkenazi community, and it doesn't make sense to just get rid of something which basically almost all Ashkenazim have kept, and the fact that it's been for such a long time. We don't usually get rid of minhagim after 1,000 years and after so many people are keeping it in the Ashkenazi community. And whether the reason applies or not, that's also debatable. I think there's a lot of things that actually do apply about the reason, about getting mixed up between kidneyot and not kidneyot, which we won't go into now. But let's just say that even Sephardim that eat, let's say, rice or beans on Pesach, they actually have to check it very, very carefully. They can't just eat it. They have to sit there for a long time checking each one 3 times and making sure that no little grains of, let's say, wheat got mixed in with the grains of rice, which, by the way, has happened from time to time. Not so often, but it does happen once in a while. It is, but it's tedious. I mean, it takes time. And sometimes I wonder whether it's even worth it. Even if I could eat the rice or whatever else it is it really worth it to spend the time to do that? Or I would just eat my Pesach foods. That's true. No. So bugs is a different story. I mean, that's not, that's vegetables, I guess. So vegetables, there's no questions of kidneys there. But yeah, the bugs are also a little bit annoying. Anyway, so that's just have the right perspective. At least if you have the perspective that we want to connect our family and to our ancestors and Ashkenazi custom, we want to feel that we're closer to who they were, 1,000 years ago. So it makes sense to say that we should keep the minhag even if, some things about it are inconvenient. But we're missing out on we want to have the connection to our heritage, the same way that many Sfarim want to have a connection to their heritage. So why are we any worse than that? Okay, it's a little more machmir, but sometimes chumers will make you have to go out and show what you're made of. You have to show that it's important to you. In addition to that, in terms of ways to help, so there are some stores that are very good about having Ashkenazi products. A lot of the Haredi stores will be much better around here in Yad Vashem. So Osherad, and I guess Osherad is really the best one. They definitely will have kidneys things, but they'll usually have most things that are available that don't have kidneys, they'll have them there. As opposed to, let's say, Shmach Sinai Shokir or Rami Levi or many other stores, Supersol. So a lot of those, certain products you won't be able to find that are not without kidneys in some form. Osherad usually will have at least one type that's not kidneys that you can get because, again, they're catering to a more Ashkenazi and more strict population. Okay, that's the background. Let's go through a couple products and see what we can see here. So the first one is matzah. I'm not going to go through all the issues of matzah. Just I think this is pretty simple, but just so we know. So obviously, all the matzah that says kosher lePesach on it is kosher for Pesach. But of course, there's different kinds. The main two differences are between shmura matzah and not shmura matzah. That's something you're familiar with. But just so you look in the stores, you understand the difference between them. Again, shmura matzah means that it was watched what's called mishas tchina, from the time that the wheat was ground, which is from very early out in the process, and maybe even from when the wheat was growing. That's what we call shmura matzah, is watched from the very beginning. And what we call not shmura matzah means it was watched to make sure that it didn't come in contact with water, but only from the time of kneading, only from the time that you actually knead the matzah, so no extra water came in contact with it other than the water that it's actually being used to make it. So that's we call not non-shmura matzah. So for the Pesach, for the Seder, we generally eat shmura matzah. The rest of Pesach, there's different customs about what to do. The strict halachas, you don't have to eat shmura matzah. But many people are machmer based on the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon said that you should try to eat. It's a mitzvah to have shmura matzah the rest of Pesach. You don't have to, but it's a mitzvah. It's a nice thing to do. So here, if you look in the stores, basically what you'll find is that the expensive ones, again, I'm talking about machine matzahs now, the expensive ones are the shmura matzahs. Those are the ones that are like under the Eidah Haredis, and those are like 70 or 80 shekel. Those are shmura matzahs. The ones that are regular Revanut, let's say Revanut Yerushalayim, or what they call Yehuda matzahs, any of these kinds of things that are about 25 shekel, those are the ones that are not shmura matzah. So don't get confused. I mean, just make sure you understand what you're getting, depending on what you want. You'll see the price difference and see one is mahadran, usually, and one is not. Both are fine. I mean, even if you don't eat mahadran, if you eat mahadran the rest of the year, but let's say for non-shmura matzah on Pesach, let's say with the Rabbanut Yerushalayim or some of the other well-known Rabbanuts, so that you can assume that it's fine and it's not a problem, but the Bedatz won't certify it because it's not shmura matzah. Okay, that's basically.
So what about the soft matzah?
Okay, so I was going to get to that in a second. Soft matzah. Okay. Yeah, you've seen it? It's in the frozen section. So I actually just saw it this past, where did I see it? I think it's Machzaneh Shuk, I think I already saw it here. So the Sfardim are allowed to have soft matzah because Sfardim, their custom, matzah probably originally was soft, it was like pita. So most Sfardi posts hold that soft matzah is perfectly fine. And therefore, what they do is, Rav Machput has, and I think there's a few other brands also, maybe that, but that's Beit Yosef, but certainly Rav Machput I've seen, basically frozen soft matzah, which you could buy in the frozen section, and it's more like pizza. For them, it's fine. And the reason why it's frozen, of course, is because if it's like pizza, it'll get moldy after a couple days if it doesn't get frozen. That's the only reason why they freeze it. The question is whether Ashkenazim can eat the frozen, the soft matzah or not. And the answer is it's a machlokas. Rav Machput. Yeah, he's a Sephardi Rav. He's a Sephardi Hashkacha. So he gives a Hashkacha on this. I think he may write something about only for Sephardim Bilvad, but I don't remember, I'm not sure if he actually writes that. Anyway, so the issue is like this, meaning the reason why Ashkenazim don't eat soft matzah is probably not a halachic issue. It's probably just a technical thing that is just, it stayed longer, meaning it didn't go bad. It didn't really go stale or sour or moldy over a long period of time. So because of that, it probably made sense that Ashkenazim, there wasn't any point. They would just make their hard matzahs. Sephardim, for whatever reason, sometimes they did it. It would go bad after a short amount of time. But Ashkenazim, that was what they often used for their Eruv in the Shul, to have their Eruv to make sure everybody can carry. So they would use the matzah as the food that you need to use for that. And they would just keep it in the Shul all year round for a whole year. It doesn't go bad. So the question is now whether we're allowed to change that. Meaning now that we have access to soft matzahs here in Israel, so can Ashkenazim eat it also? So many rabbanim say no, only because it's a strong minhag, not as strong as kidneys. It's only been around for a couple hundred years, and halachically it's not as severe, meaning it's not really a halachic issue according to most. But many just say, well, that's been the minhag for a long time, and we shouldn't really go into change things on Pesach without a really good reason. But there are some rabbanim that say that you can eat it, including Rav Aviner here in Israel, and Rav Schechter in YU also says that it's actually permissible. So if you ask me, I don't think it's worth it to start tampering with these kinds of minhagim. I think we have plenty of normal matzah. I don't think you need to go for the soft matzah. But if somebody who really wanted to, who was Ashkenazi, and they really felt that it was important for them, or they really had a desire for it, I wouldn't.
I hear it.
So again, personally, I'm more of I like keeping the custom if there's no good reason to switch it. So I would say in that case, if somebody really feels that's a real problem, then maybe there's what to be lenient about. But personally, I'm not so into it. Even though Rav Schechter was one of my rabbis in YU, Rabbi Willig, another Rav from YU, if you know who he is, so he's not into it. He's very, very into minhagim. You don't change the minhag just because. So that's personally what I would recommend following. But again, there is what to rely on if you or people for some specific reason wanted to have soft matzah other than just it's a chavayah. There definitely are rabbis that allow it. I think there was discussions about Rav Yashiv also. Maybe he allowed it. I don't really know he did. But they claim that maybe he also said something that might have permitted it in some situations. So again, it's, in personal opinion, is better to not go with it. But those that need, maybe you can add, you can maybe rely on it. But again, I'm not, I wouldn't say it should be the first order, the first choice. It should be like your last choice, maybe. That'd be my opinion. In terms of wine and grape juice, I'm just going through my list here of different things. So wine and grape juice in general are fine. Okay, most of them are mahadrin without a problem. Check to make sure. If you want only mahadrin ones, check to make sure. The only thing you have to be careful about with this is Otsar Beis Din, that there are a couple wines out there that are Otsar Beis Din, meaning that they're from the Shemitah year, and they have Kedusha Shvius, or they have Heter Mechira, depending on which one you get. The ones that have been around for the last couple months, some of them are Heter Mechira, some of the grape juices, and maybe some of the wines also. So if you don't need Heter Mechira, you got to be careful in terms of that. Just check the labeling very carefully. And if it's Otsar Beis Din, so also that's, you can use Otsar Beis Din, it's a great, some people say it's a mitzvah even to use Kedusha Shvius wine. There's only two issues to be aware of. Number one is, right, so that's the big thing. You're not supposed to waste wine or grape juice, which is Otsar Beis Din. So many poskim or cook and others say that if you're going to use it for your second cup of, at the Seder, so we have a custom that we generally take out when we do the Ten Makot, we take out a little bit of wine or grape juice from our cups. For whatever reason it is, there's different explanations of why that might be. But if you're using Otsar Beis Din wine or grape juice, you shouldn't do that, according to most opinions. Not all, but most say that you shouldn't do it, because it's an unnecessary waste. It's a nice custom, but it's not something which would cause you to violate a halacha of not keeping the wine or the grape juice, but kedusha, it's just going to go on your plate and it's going to get wasted. So that generally should probably be avoided. Again, some disagree, but that's what most people say. And the other thing to be aware of, and by the way, I don't know if you have this, but we actually found one of our wines from Purim that somebody gave us. It was Otsar Beis Din. I didn't realize at first, but then when I looked at it more carefully, I realized it was Otsar Beis Din. So it was definitely a real thing. The second thing to realize is there's a mitzvah of biur, that the day before Pesach, on Erev Pesach, is actually the date that Chazal said that you're supposed to get rid of your Kedushat Shviyut, grapes or wine. This is a whole halacha, which we're not going to go into it now, but basically there's this halacha that at the end of the Shemitah year, so different dates for different foods, but basically whenever the last of the fruit or whatever it is in the field is gone. So then the halacha is that you have to get rid of it from your house also. If you have any left in your house, you have to remove it. You have to be mafkir it. So without getting into the questions, not so well known if you're not from Israel, right?
And you can't eat it after that date?
So that's a question. Most people say that you can. Again, just to understand, most things this is not relevant for, because most fruits, let's say, they're going to be long gone from the stores well before the date of the biur.
All the citrus fruits are all...
So the citrus fruits, the date of biur is not until the middle of the summer.
I see.
Meaning basically it goes by whenever there won't be very many left in the field, or there'll be none left in the field. So then that's when you have to get it out of the house. How do you know what date that is? So again, Chazal gave certain dates, and then some of the dates that you can find online or on some of these booklets or whatever, some of them will give you suggested dates for the other ones. But citrus fruits will definitely be around until into the summer. So that the beer for them didn't take place yet. But for grapes and for wine, so Chazal said that the date is Erev Pesach, the year after Shemitah. So for that, again, grapes and most fruits is not such a big deal because they're going to go bad after a few days or for a week or two. But wine stays around. Wine will remain. So for wine, you have to be careful that the date of the beer, which is Erev Pesach, you have to basically go and be mafkir. You have to take it and put it out of your possession.
But you can't really use that sort of place.
So hold on. So you can. So basically, it's a machlokas, but the halacha is like this. The halacha, according to most opinions, against the Rambam. The Rambam has a different opinion about this. But most posts say what you can do is basically be mafkirit, which means you take it preferably out of your house, put it out somewhere. If you can get three people nearby to say, not family members, three people to say in front of three people, I am being mafkir this, I hereby declare it ownerless, anybody can come and take it, that would be ideal. If you can't get three people to do it with, you can do it on your own or in front of your family. But l'chadchil, it's better to have three people do it, and it's better to send it and put it outside your house, right out in front somewhere. And then you can wait 15 minutes, half an hour, and then you can take it back. Meaning you can reacquire it the same way that anyone else who came along and saw it there could reacquire it as well. So based on that, you're allowed to take it back and put it right back on your table and use it again for Pesach if you want. But you just got to make sure that you do that first. Basically for Pesach this year, that should be fine. Because Erev Pesach, you're going to have all your ingredients already, all your products already. So this should be fine to just do that. If it's later in the year, a few months from now, there's another question. If you buy from the store Kedushat Shviat wine 3 months from now and you don't know if the beer was done, then that's a different story, which we're not going to get into now. But certainly for now, at this point, you can just do it yourself and it shouldn't be a problem. Just got to be aware of it. Again, I don't know if either of you have or anybody else has, but that's something that it is out there. There are some that are around, so be careful in terms of that. You have any questions on that point? Okay.
Are we skipping left tea or you just haven't gotten to?
Which thing? Leaf tea? Yeah, I'll get to it. Okay. In terms of vegetables, maror and romaine lettuce, so obviously the issue is bugs. That's the same thing as the rest of the year. So whatever you do the rest of the year, you should do on Pesach also, obviously. Just be careful because it's not just, okay, I want to have salad. I have an obligation to have maror, so I need to eat my lettuce. What did you say? Yeah, it's fine, but you still have to, according to the rules, the instructions, you still have to soak it in dish detergent water for 3 minutes and rinse it off afterwards. So just make sure that you do it carefully. And some of the brands are better than others. Some of the brands actually do have, we've found once in a while, you found bugs on them. Certainly get the brands that are the Gush Katik brands, but even in terms of those brands, I think some are better than others. I don't have a list, personally, of which ones are better. I'm not sure, but I've seen the list. What did you say? Yeah, no, believe me, that's why we never do either again. It doesn't work. Anyway, so that's in terms of margin, just be careful in terms of that. Cookies and cakes, I'm just going through a bunch of different things here. So again, some are labeled as kitnios and say ochli kitniot bilvad, and in general, those should be avoided by Ashkenazim. Cakes also should be, any cakes that actually say ochli kitniot bilvad probably should be avoided. Most of the ones that are mahadran have potato starch. Okay, they don't have matzah meal. So that's something to be aware of. Again, it means you're going to make a bracha, which is shahakal, rather than mizonos. There may be some that will actually be mizonos with matzah meal, but those probably will not be mahadran. So again, it probably means that if you see cake mix or something like that, which is made with matzah meal, and it doesn't have a mahadran hashkacha, and only has a rabbanut hashkacha, there's a good chance that the standards are fine. It just means the mahadran is...
Who's
that? So if you ask me, I think that it's probably okay. It'd be nice if you could call every single one and ask them, aside from the issue of matzah meal, are you mahadran the rest of the year? Or mahadran, are the other standards mahadran? I think usually you would say yes. Meaning the reason why the datas don't follow it is because of is because of the idea of the matzah meal. Again, you could be machmir if you want. There's no reason. There's no problem being machmir, obviously.
Well, but there's like a certain hechsher, like the Pesach.
So there are some. Being some, there are some that have.
Usually they are badats during the year, but then they have this hechsher on it. It's not badats, but it has like a special.
Which thing are you talking about?
Like on the cake, almost most of the stuff has like a specific, you know what I'm talking
about? You're talking about the chasm silver?
I've seen
no, it's not like a
mahadra.
It's like a non-mahadra. It's like a
right.
It's like...
So that's exactly what I'm saying. So again, if you want to be machmir, by all means, there's room to be machmir for sure. But if you're not looking for chumras, if you're looking to find to actually be able to buy certain things, and you're having trouble finding things to buy, so, you know, one probably could be makil. About those kinds of things, and it's clear that the reason why they lost their mahadra and ashkacha is only because of the matzah meal.
How would it be clear?
If you see something which is like a cake or cookie, which are not difficult things to certify, those things are very easy. There's not too many problems with them, and you see that it has matzah meal in it, kemach matzot or something like that, and you see it's not mahadra, then that's probably why. Again, if you want to get potato starch things and you go to the right store, you can definitely get stuff. But I'm just saying, if it's something that's difficult or whatever, so just be aware that that's probably the reason why it's not. And if you wanted to be more makele, you could. In terms of the lifti, so this is a whole discussion which we're not going to have now, but just to understand the basic point. So lifti basically is rapes, okay, or rape seed. What is that? So rape seed basically is, would you say, right? So basically, that's the vegetable that grows that canola oil is taken from. Usually in its original form, it's not edible. But they take out, they extract certain things, and they can make it either into canola oil, or they have at least, I don't know about in other countries, but certainly here they have, you know, this they can extract stuff and make it into, let's say, a cake or something like that, and you know it'll obviously turn to become edible. It's like a flavoring of some sort. So what they do today, this they didn't used to do this, but today what they do on a lot of these cakes, a lot of them are Osem, and some are other brands, and you'll see some of them will say like in big letters Mechil Lifti, that they include Lifti, and you'd be like, what's that? So the answer is basically it's the same thing as the canola question, which means that many people are makil and hold that canola oil and reaps, because it's not edible in its original form, are not included in kenyos. And some are machmir and say that no, canola oil is included, and this also you would need to be machmir about. So the question is just, again, it's a big machlokas. There are some, the Avnei Nezer, the Sakha Shavarav had a tshuva who basically said you should be machmir about reaps, and based on a canola oil as well. He has another one where he seems to contradict himself, and the other people disagreed with him. There's a whole machlokas. Basically, if you want to follow what the OU standard is, the OU standard generally is machmir on canola, and they do not certify canola for Pesach. They assume that it's kenyos. Here in Israel, though, many of the hashkachas and many poskim are more makil. So if you wanted to follow the OU, which we personally do, you definitely can be machmir, not eat lifti, but there's definitely room to be makil if you wanted to be makil. Those that want to be more makil, so there's definitely room to decide that at least in terms of lifti itself, that you could eat. There's a lot of other considerations also here, which are, you know, that it's a very small amount. It's definitely less than 50%. So that's also a consideration when it comes to kitnios, that if there's kitnios less than a certain amount, that it's batel. So,
if let's say we decide we're not keeping canola oil,
So here's the thing. First thing I would just say also, in terms of lifti is maybe even better than canola oil, because lifti, meaning because the whole cake is only a very small percentage of lifti, as opposed to canola oil, where the whole oil is canola. So one could conceivably decide that you want it to be makil on lifti products, and still be machmir to have. Not have canola oil. That's a possibility. You could say that. If you want to make it on canola completely, so there are some big posts here in Israel that are making it on canola, even though the OU is not. Who's that? So again, the problem is that Rav Hadaya is Sephardi, and despite the fact he knows what Ashkenazi Pesach is, but what you'll tend to find that many Sephardi Rabbanim will automatically include in their cheshbon of telling what's Tal Ashkenazi for these kinds of things. Well, you know, because you have two or three sfeikos, and because it's a machlokas whether kitnios has it, it's oster, so you could be more megil.
They can't make flour out of oil. That's what their cheshbon is that it's already an oil. So the whole chashash of kitnios is that you can make things into bread and to make things into.
You're right. So again, there's different considerations, but. There definitely are. Most achronim hold that oil is a problem. I mean, that oil, which is from kinyos, is a problem. Okay, that's what most achronim hold, including the Ramah and Mishnah Berurah, and most achronim hold like that. The question was, if they make the oil in such a way where there is no water involved when they make it, the same way that if you had, you know, matzah without any water, additional water other than the actual what you used to knead it with, then it would be okay. So they say kineos also, maybe the same thing is true. The problem is, from what I understand, most of the things today that we're talking about, that's not true anymore. They don't do that. They don't make it without water, with certain exceptions, but not most of the time. So I'm not sure that consideration works. And you're left with the other considerations. So if you ask me, if you wanted to make, I would say canola oil, again, there is what to make it for if you want. But maybe there's room to be machmir around that also. But products that have canola oil, you have an additional kula, which is that most of the product is not canola, it's something else, and then there's a little bit of canola oil included as well. But you know, just so you know, there are big Ashkenazi posts also that are makel. Rav Melamed in the Pnei Halacha, he holds you could be makel on canola oil. I believe that other big rabbanim also, Rav Dov Lior, he's a big one that they know about from Chevron. So Rav Dov Lior also holds that Ashkenazi can makel on canola oil. Most of the Badatz Hashkachas are machmir on canola oil. Okay, most of them do not accept it. Rav Rimon had a question about it. I think he held, if I remember correctly, that canola oil, there may be makom to be machmir, but products, what I said before, products that have canola oil in them, you could be making all that. That's what he held. Again, I may be getting that wrong, but I believe that's what he said. I can for sure check, because I have it in my notes somewhere. I just have to go search for it. maybe I even wrote it here. What'd you say?
A question came in from the outside, yes.
That's funny. Okay.
Wish it could be on the shear, but I can't, so can you ask this question?
Okay. About this point or about something else?
About quinoa.
Okay, so we'll get to quinoa in a few minutes. Okay, we'll get to that. Okay, let's just talk about some of the other things first that are, I guess, included in this category so you know what we're talking about here. We mentioned the oils. Okay, so canola oil, again, as we just said, is a big question. Most people do accept that soybean oil is kineos, though, again, there are some that disagree, but it seems that the more accepted opinion is that soybean oil is kineos. What do you say? Because soy was found later, meaning Moshe Feinstein and many others hold that products that were not, they weren't aware of them at the time when the kineos custom
soy
began.
Is like quinoa,
right. The difference is like this. The difference is that Moshe says in his tshuva, again, others disagree, but this seems to be pretty accepted, that anything which has been accepted by many people as kineos, even if you would argue it was never included in the beginning, becomes kineos because of the custom. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense, because the whole concept to begin with is a custom. So if the custom is based on what the custom was, but then the custom changes and people take on more things, then that's what the custom is. That's what emotions happen basically with peanut butter. Okay, peanuts and peanut butter. Many people used to be making about that they're not kineos for the same reason. Peanuts were an American food. They didn't know about it in Europe in the 1200s. But slowly, slowly, over the past 100 years, people became more machmir about peanuts and peanut butter as kineos. And today, it's very uncommon to find people that are making about it. Even though, you know, even some of my rabbanim said, you know, they remember 50, 60 years ago, tons of people ate it. Today, it's not done anymore. So according to Moshe's logic, that would be basically that the custom has become people want it to be machmir. Why? Not because they're trying to make life difficult, which they are, but the point is that, again, if you take the custom seriously and you want to show your attachment to the custom and your heritage and, you know, the idea of Pesach being, you know, going above and beyond, not in a bad way, but in a good way. We want to show above and beyond that we're, you know, we take the chumrah of chametz and we run away with it. Do you have to? No. But if we do, we're showing something. We want to show our desire is there. So, you know, then the custom makes sense. The custom can be more machmir. But again, here in Israel, there's a lot of other things in addition that people, you know, because of Sfaradim here, it's, you know, there's more room to be mekel. So peanuts, I think you won't find that here. Peanut oil, you won't find. But canola oil you will find, so that's a question. Cottonseed oil is a big machlokas also. Cottonseed oil in America, the OU actually does accept. Here in Israel, some do and some don't. So you can find it. If your custom in America was to accept it, you probably can accept it here also. But most of the badatzes in Israel do not accept it, with one or two exceptions. So, again, if you ask me, I cottonseed oil is also a similar in question to the canola, but it seems that the custom was less prevalent to be machmir about it, for whatever reason. Than canola was. So bottom line is, I think there is room to be makel about it, but again, based on your custom, you can go either way in terms of that. The other oils that we would have here, so the other ones are, you know the Mahadran ones here, maybe you're not familiar with this yet. The Mahadran oils that the Ashkenazi Mahadran people use are basically date palm oil and walnut oil, which are great in terms of hashkacha, but the problem is they're probably not so healthy and they taste terrible. So have to decide. We've gotten used to it. We've used them and, you know, we manage. We deal with it for a week. Right, you could use olive oil if you want. It's about five times more expensive. But if you want to use that, for sure the olive oil is never a question. That would be fine. And I'm sure that's very healthy. Okay, that's in terms of the oils. If you have any other questions about that, you can stand now. If not, I'll just tell you some of the products that have this question about canola and, you know, minority of the product. Mayonnaise is one. A lot of the tomato sauces. ketchup, tuna. a lot of these products you will find, say, kosher lepesach lo'ochle kitniot bilvad. You'll be like, what in the world? Where did tuna become kitniot? It doesn't make any sense. Where exactly? So I guess that one was pretty obvious. But when you deal with...
You
say? Right. So you can find in Osherah, they actually have one of the brands, the Israeli brands actually, is with water. What'd you say? So you got to read the labels very, very carefully.
I mean, it's definitely in water.
Right. And you read the labels very carefully. You want to show it to me, if you want to take it out. Right. So again, it's the same thing. They might have a little bit of, something like, I don't know if they have oil or something else. Some of the meats, Rav Machbud meats, some of the meats also say lochle kitniot bilvad, again, because they're soaked in some sort of, I don't know if it's oil, but something which has, kitniot in it. Basically, all of these kinds of things are the same issue, which is basically that there's a very, very small percentage of kitniot or oil kitniot which is included. And because of that, they have to write that it's only for ochle kitniot. However, there are many poskim in Israel, though not all obviously, but many poskim in Israel say that because of the fact that it's made for Sephardim, it's not made for Ashkenazim, so it's permissible for Ashkenazim to use it because for us it's batal. Meaning the halacha for kitniot is that it's batal if it's less than 50% of the product, it's batal and you can eat it. So you can't do that lecharchila, you can't make it that way, but if somebody else made it for Sephardim and not for you, then according to many poskim, you can eat it. So again, you have to know what you're talking about, meaning you have to know which products is which. You can't just do it on your own. You have to be aware, the tuna is included in that. Again, the Rav Machbud hamburgers and some of the meats that say lochle kitniot bilvad, the mayonnaise, all these things which are, minority amount of kitniot and maybe even oil, canola oil. So there is room to make it all that. If you want to be machmir, we personally are machmir, but I wouldn't tell everybody that you have to machmir. I think it's something which is a personal chumrah. If you want to keep the chumrah, you're welcome to, and it's not a bad thing. But if you want it to be makil, so if you know what you're doing, then if you know how to differentiate which products are which, so there probably is some room to be makil about it. But again, you have to be very careful. You have to really know what you're, make sure you know what you know your products. There's a lot of other things like that also, which again, you have to be careful about. But that's the general idea of some of these things. Any questions about that? No. Okay.
I mean, I guess. I had a question about bitzel, but I don't know if you want to answer that now.
Yeah, it's fine.
I just, what is the issue? It's like if there's a crumb at the table, it's a problem. If the crumb gets into your food before Pesach,
right,
then it's not a problem.
Right.
But you do bitzel chametz, so right, even a crumb. Now, right, why is that still a problem?
Well, the problem is that you can't eat it. I mean, once you're mevatel it, so it basically means that it has no value to you, but you still can't eat it. That's the halacha, what's called achshaveh, that you treat, if you eat it, you treat it as being something significant, which goes against the idea of being vatal. If you say it's batal, then you're not going to eat it because it's worthless. But the minute you put it in your mouth, then it means it meant something to you. So the halacha is that that's still considered to be a problem.
Even if it's, like, say there was a crumb on the outside of your jar of marinara sauce.
Right.
Somehow you ate it. That's,
right. Still a problem.
It's a problem.
Still a problem. Again, if you didn't intend it, it's one thing, but you have to prepare for these things. I mean, you have to make sure that if you have products like that were sealed, but you want to use on Pesach, you have to make sure they're fully washed and fully clean. I mean, this is obvious, but the halacha would be that any, little crumb is included, okay? Again, maybe if you have crumbs in your house somewhere on the floor, obviously you should clean them, but maybe that's not the worst thing in the world. If it's less than a kezayit, that's a bit of a machloket, that crumbs that are less than a kezayit, if they're on the floor and they're disgusting, do you have to go and scrub every single spot? Of course we do, but maybe it's not the worst thing in the world. But when it comes to eating it, the minute we're talking about eating it, then we're talking about an iser karis. And even if it's less than a kezayit, still the severity is very strong. It's still midoraisa. So you have to, you have to treat it accordingly.
And what is it with the eggs also? It's like, it's another...
Personally, I never felt you have to be so machmir about that. But again, there is some question that maybe the inkjet on the outside of the eggs has starch on it. So maybe you should be careful about that. Again, personally, I'm not such a...
What if, and you don't know where the chicken's been, I thought?
That would be true also. I don't think halacha.
I don't understand the difference between buying them in advance and them sitting on the right shelf versus them sitting
right
on the shelf.
Personally, I don't think you have to be so machmir about that. Maybe there's a question. If there was some question on Pesach, something got mixed up, so we're more machmir about it than if it happened before Pesach. But in terms of eggs, I think the whole thing is a big chumrah. Again, this is my personal opinion. I don't think it's a problem to have eggs beforehand.
I don't even understand the chumrah. It's like if I purchase it before and it's sitting in my kitchen versus if it's sitting in the kitchen on the shelf.
I'm not sure.
There's
a custom about it. Right. I think the truth is, I think it's not just the halach. I think it's also a big, it's a custom that some people had.
I don't understand. Somebody said, you don't know where the chicken's been, and so you really should use all your eggs before.
Right.
Because nobody does.
Any questions?
I understand that this summer you purchase all the eggs before Pesach, so that they're sitting on your own shelf versus sitting in the grocery store.
Right. Yeah, and I can't say I understand the difference between that. I think they're just worried that maybe, again, if you're machmer that the chicken chametz.
Chicken eating chametz?
So there's a question. Yeah, it's not. There is a question about it, but the strict halacha is probably not. Exactly right. So that's the Here. So I'll read you the way Rabbi Eider describes this. Rabbi Eider says that he explains it the following way. He says, some people use only unwashed eggs during Pesach. This is the custom of some machmirim. The reason is that since the eggs were washed with the chicken feed, which may contain chametz, and with questionable detergents, chametz may have been absorbed by the eggs during the washing. Okay, that's the, again, he discusses it here. He quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe is not, he's not so worried about this. So he says that it's not really a problem. He says, although most poskim hold that it is permissible, the eggs should be rinsed before cooking. Okay? And again, the starch on the little letters on the egg is not such a big deal either, I don't think. More than that, I don't think it has to be more machmer than that. And, I don't think it's such a problem. So, that's in terms of that. Okay. Let's stop this for a second. All right, so what was the question again? The other one about quinoa? That was the question?
The eggs.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, that was the eggs we just said now. That's again, more than that, you could be machmer. There are reasons to be machmer, but I don't think it's really significant. Personally, I wouldn't go crazy about it. What was the other question again about quinoa?
Quinoa was another question. Did you get to that yet?
I don't have any order anymore. I guess we could talk about it now. Okay. So quinoa is a whole big question. What's the status of quinoa? Meaning that quinoa has certain properties that are similar to kitnios, to beans, and other things that are not. It's really, closer to it, like a grain type of thing. So the question is whether quinoa is problematic or not. So what most poskim hold today, though not all, I think most of the Bedatzes are machmer, in Israel are machmer about this, but the OU holds, if you look at their website, and many other poskim hold, that the same thing Rav Moshe said about some of the other things is the same thing here. Meaning, technically speaking, quinoa was not around. I mean, it was around, but nobody knew about it in terms of, in Europe, and the Jews. Nobody knew about it at the time of this custom of quinoa. It was in South America. The fact that we suddenly discovered it now in the past 50 years, whatever it is, so it's not included in the minhag, according to the strict minhag. It should not be included. If you want to be machmir, so you can be machmir, but at this point, it does not seem like the majority of Ashkenazim are machmir about quinoa. And therefore, the halacha should be that having quinoa on Pesach should be fine, even for Ashkenazim, not for Sephardim. The only question would be, not so much in Israel, but in Chutz La'aretz, you have to make sure that sometimes, this is what I've understood from the OU and the CRC, that quinoa sometimes is processed on the same machinery and equipment as wheat or grains. And therefore, there is a question that maybe you can't use. There have been mix-ups and stuff like that. You can't use quinoa, which has not been, kosher lePesach quinoa.
When we were there, my sister was saying you have to buy the Trader Joe's.
Exactly. So that's what they usually say. I think for whatever reason, the Trader Joe one seems to be, they process it specifically only with quinoa, not on the same equipment as other grains. So because of that, the OU says that you can only get those kinds and not the other ones. Because of that concern. It's exactly the same concern as the rest of kitnios, meaning that things might get mixed up. And again, quinoa is hard to check because the pieces are so small. Again, if you know what you're doing, maybe you could check it, but again, it's annoying. And even if not, you have to really be able to go through every single one and check it out.
It's easier to check because the wheat is bigger. I mean, anything
that's... But maybe barley, though. I think barley is...
Barley is bigger than the quinoa.
It's true. So again, if you wanted to check it, you could check it, but you got to spend an hour checking it then. You can't just use it, and that probably takes some, a lot of the fun out of it if you're going to sit there and check it. But again, if you check that and you know what you're doing,
you could check it.
Ideal. What?
It doesn't take an hour.
I don't know how long it takes.
I'm pretty good at
Yeah?
Checking.
Okay, so again, if you're good at it. I guess if you check it. Right? Yeah. Wow.
No, I won't.
I never found it. Wow, that's crazy. So it should be fine.
She asks if it needs a kosher lePesach hechsher, okay. If it's bought before Pesach, and check.
Okay, so basically, if you buy it here in Israel, I think almost all the quinoa here says, I don't know during the year, but at this point during the year, a lot of the quinoa says kosher lePesach lochli kinyot. So if it says kosher lePesach lochli kinyot, then you can buy it and you can use it and you don't have to check it. That's what I would think. I cannot guarantee that every single one is, but I'm sure you can find enough that are, that it shouldn't be a problem to say that you should do that.
We don't have to check it before.
I don't think so. I think if it says kashrut pesach l'kitnio, what that means is they've checked it and made sure. I mean, it's nice to check it again. You could check it again, but yeah, I don't know if you need to. Would you say? Right. So you're looking for a different thing, though. But if you're checking it out, you might as well, you know, but it's not as severe. It's not like the same thing as, you know, being so careful. You should try to check it, but it's not such a big deal. I mean, I don't think you absolutely have to. If it's, you know, kashrut pesach l'kitnio, it means that they made sure that there's no chametz and no chashash chametz.
I found sometimes, like, rice in it.
Really? But again, not the ones for Pesach, probably. Those are the ones they specifically check.
I think that's what I thought. I remember the last time I was checking.
So it could be that in terms of rice, maybe you do have to be careful. Meaning, if it says kashrut pesach l'kitnio, maybe they can't guarantee that there wasn't rice mixed up. Maybe there was, you know, wheat, but no concern of wheat. Maybe the rice would be. So I guess it's a good idea to check it anyway. But again, I don't know how careful you have to be. In general, that's the answer that I've heard from most of the things here, is that it's not such a problem. Again, if you're making along the principle of what we said, then it's not such a problem to get the ones that say kashrut pesach l'kitnio.
I want to make sure I get your answer right. If it says kashrut pesach l'kitnio, it's fine. It only needs to be checked for bugs and maybe rice.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah.
But it definitely has to say kashrut pesach.
It should, yeah. Yeah, it should. Yeah. Yeah. So... Okay, a couple other things. In terms of drinks, so just be careful that the drinks have a kashrut pesach hashgacha. Most do, but not all, so be careful. In terms of the diet sodas, just be aware if you drink diet soda that the mahadran hashgachas generally do not give a hashgacha on diet sodas. And the reason why is because the same reason is in chutz la'aretz, that there's a bit of a question. Would you say?
No.
So in terms of the regular soda, the corn syrup is not an issue. Corn syrup is what they use in the United States to make Coca-Cola with, but in Israel they don't use it, they just use sugar, which means it's worse for your teeth, but it's halachically for Pesach is much better. And the reason they do that, at least for, this is all for Coke, the reason they do that is specifically for Pesach. They don't want to have to change the recipe every year for Pesach only. So they use the same recipe all year long, and it's fine.
Corn syrup is also bad.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Maybe you're right, maybe corn syrup is even worse actually, I take that back. You're right. But in America they use corn syrup the rest of the year, and here they don't. That's in terms of Coca-Cola. In terms of diet soda, so the big question for diet soda is NutraSweet. NutraSweet is a big machlokas, whether NutraSweet is considered to be kitniyos, because it's made out of, I forgot which product it is, but what it's made out of is kitniyos, but it's chemically altered. So the question is whether chemically altered kitniyos in liquid form is a problem of kitniyos or not, and it's a big machlokas, I suppose, given what the status is of that. The OU is generally machmir about it. Here in Israel, I think the Mahadran Hashkachas also are generally machmir, but the Rabbanut is mekel. So you just have to be careful when you finally say on Diet Coke or Diet Sprite or Diet whatever, it says, you know, Kashrut Pesach somewhere on the bottle. But then if you look carefully, you will not find a Mahadran Hashgacha. And sometimes they're not in the same place. You may get confused. Meaning, say, for example, Coke is under Rav Landau's Hashgacha. So it says Kashrut Pesach in one spot on the bottle. And then somewhere else on the bottle, it'll say, give the Hashgacha Rav Landau. And diets, it'll say Kashrut Pesach in the same way with the triangle or the box, whatever it is. And it won't have the Rulana Sashkach, it'll just have the Rabbanut of, I think it's Tel Aviv, I think it's sort of one of the Tel Aviv Rabbanuts. So you just gotta be careful to understand the issue, just if you want to be Machmer, which again, personally, if you're, you know, in general, if you were Machmer in the United States or something that you generally are Machmer about these kinds of kitniyos things, it does make sense to be Machmer, but it's a mikvach lokas. So obviously there is room to be makel because kitniyos is only a custom and it's changed form. You always can, you know, pile on these leniencies. So if you wanted to be makel, you certainly could be makel. But that's, again, just be aware that's an issue. Okay, that's what you're up against in terms of diet sodas. In terms of dairy products, so again, you'll find also a lot of things. Most of the milk is fine. What a lot of them say is kashrut l'pesach, erev pesach. You see those, the milks and the puddings and the yogurts, they're all over the place. What does that mean? It just means that it was bottled and it was processed before Pesach started. Because there are some people that are machmer that if it was done on Pesach itself, they're afraid that maybe there was a little crumb in it or something like that. And as we said before, so the halacha on Pesach is that if something of chametz got in on Pesach itself, so then it's not batel. Meaning as opposed to before Pesach, where it is batel b'shishim, but on Pesach it's not batel, so they're afraid. Is it possible that might happen? Almost definitely not. It's almost unlikely. I don't remember where I saw this from, but Rav Whitman in Tenuva, the Rav of Tenuva, he basically said they apparently have special straining systems, which make sure that chametz cannot possibly get in the milk. But people are machmer anyway, because they were always machmer, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's why, you know, some people will only buy the milk if it says kashrut l'pesach, erev pesach on it. But if you ask me, I don't think it's a problem to buy on Pesach, even if it doesn't say that. It just says kashrut l'pesach. Again, inkjetted on the top, and the print, whatever it is. So then that should be fine. Same thing for all the other dairy products that have the same question. That's also fine. in terms of the other dairy products, some of them will say ochle kitniot, some of the puddings and the ice creams. So it's the same issue as we said before, where some of them might have, well, how do you pronounce it? How do you pronounce the word? How do you pronounce it? I don't remember how to pronounce it. Lecithin. I don't remember how to pronounce it right. So lecithin is also a machlok, is what the story is of lecithin. It's also maybe based on, I think it's either rapes or one of these kind of things, which is a machlokas, and it's changed form, and et cetera, et cetera. So, so again, you know, the OU probably would be machmer about it. But there are many poskim that are makel, and certainly here in Israel, if it says it's for ochle kitniot, meaning for svardim, so again, it's already batal. Once an Ashkenazi bite is, it is not such a big deal. And therefore, there are many that would be makel here. So if you wanted to be, choose to be makel about that, again, on puddings and, I think ice cream is the other one also. Ice cream has another ingredient as well, which is xanthan gum. Is that how they pronounce it? Yeah. That's another one, which is kitniot shenishtana. It's changed form. So they're also, again, the ice creams will say ochle kitniot bilvad, but almost definitely it's the same issue that if you wanted to make it about this batel derov, and because it's kitniot shenishtanu, it's changed form, or the lecithin is based on the reaps, which is also a machlokas. So there's a lot to be makel on if you wanted to makel. There's enough reasons why you could be makel if you wanted to. That's the story in terms of that. But again, a lot of these puddings and ice creams, if you've shop at the right stores, you can find ones that have no question of kitniot whatsoever, so you don't have to even worry about it. Just got to make sure to go to the right store. That's the story in terms of that. Okay, any other questions on that? Anything else like that? No. Okay, any other questions about products? I didn't cover every single thing. I covered a lot of stuff.
I wanted to ask about vanilla extract being chametz gum or not. If it says it has alcohol in it, do I need to call the company and ask if we're going to sell chametz gum?
Where you're talking about regular, just vanilla?
Kirkland's brand vanilla extract.
North America. So here's the problem. I'm not sure about that specifically. I don't remember offhand.
So I looked it up. I found the website. It's called Din Online.
I'm familiar with it. Yeah. Some things they
say.
What do they say?
It's Suffolk Chametz.
Right. So here's the problem. So again, I can't talk about vanilla specifically, but in general, a lot of these kinds of things that have alcohol, it's often unknown. And even the company may not be able to tell you whether it's alcohol, which is chametz gum, or whether it's alcohol, which is kitniot, or whether it's alcohol, which is totally innocent and it's totally fine. So the problem is when you're not sure, especially if you're dealing with a Suffolk Chametz, you have to be machmer.
Even for selling?
No, I'm sorry. In terms of, you're right. Okay. In terms of buying it, that you certainly, you know, should not buy it. You shouldn't use it on Pesach. If there's a alcohol, which you can't verify what it is, because again, a lot of them, you don't know what type of alcohol it is. When it comes to selling it, so put it this way, you definitely can sell it. The question is, if you want to be machmir and only sell things which are not chametz gumor, which is the custom of many of us here in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz Laretz, it also exists, but it's a little bit less prevalent in Chutz Laretz. I mean, a lot of people do also, but it's less so here, even more so. So that's a question, whether you can sell it, does it qualify as chametz gumor? So the answer probably is that it does not. What's the reason why? Because any products that have a small amount of chametz gumor in them, probably less than 50% is what they usually say, is not considered to be chametz gumor. I'm sorry, it's a question of how much it is. I mean, basically what they say is it's got to be what's called kezayis b'kedei achilas pras. I mean, if you have a kezayis amount of chametz within the amount that you would, you know, what's called kedei achilas pras, the amount that you would eat over the span of a couple minutes, so then that would be considered to be chametz gumor in terms of selling. But if it's less than that, which, again, you know, it's small amounts, meaning anything which is less than 50% on the product list is probably not included, which means basically you would be allowed to sell it even if you don't sell chametz gumor. So basically what that means is all the products that might have chametz gumor in them, but it's not the main it's not the main thing, meaning anything other than, you know, cookies and cakes and noodles and, you know, oatmeal and anything which is clearly chametz gumor, anything other than that is probably not included. If you're not sure, the Star K has a nice thing on their website. They have a whole list of what's considered to be chametz gumor and what's not, specifically in terms of selling it for people that don't sell chametz gumor. So take a look at the Starkey website. If you need the link, I can find it for you. Yeah. For what?
Dog food.
Yeah, so that was on my list. It was one of the things I didn't mention. I forgot that you have a talk. So dog food, you gotta be careful about dog food. Also the same, you know, dogs can't eat and you can't get benefit from foods that are chametz.
But the question is, do we have to get rid of, throw away what we have?
You could sell. Well, that's the question. Meaning, yeah, probably, yeah, that's... It depends on the product. Meaning, if it's mostly chametz, and you know, That's you have to be sure. But obviously, it's roil achilas kelev because it's dog food. So if the standard is that anything which is eaten by a dog is considered, what is
that? Not that she really likes it.
I see, but it's still it's edible for dogs, right? Even if she doesn't like it. So I would guess the answer is probably yes that you have to if you're machmir not to sell chametz gomer and it's mostly chametz, meaning it's not like meat. You know, it's like a dog biscuit, which is mostly chametz with a little bit of something else. I would guess probably that you have to get rid of it, yeah, which is really annoying. Put it this way, if it's something which is a significant loss, meaning if it's a lot of money, a lot of stuff, then maybe you could be makel. Because the whole thing is, you know, it's not so clear. I mean, the ikar din, the sale does work. But there are many people that are machmir. So the chumrah of not selling chametz gomer doesn't have to be kept if it's a significant loss.
Like fish and meat there are biscuits, and
right.
There's like the dog food.
Right, so the fish and meat stuff is probably fine because you should sell it, obviously, but that it's not chametz gomer if it's a much smaller amount of actual chametz inside. Okay. You found a way to get kasher Pesach dog food?
Yeah, that's just reminded me. I sent
Tamil. Right, so Tamil alone is the one in our community. She's the one that's in charge of that. She can be contacted to know where to get the kasher Pesach ones. But yes, obviously, apparently it's not great. I mean, I think in my shiur that I gave on pets last year, I think I had some. She was there, so she gave us some insights in terms of how to figure it out. But not all pets like the kasher Pesach food. That's the problem. So, yes, I don't know. So there's the other things you can do also, but I guess you have to talk to her for other possibilities. Okay. Right. So she has ways of getting things that are good. Okay. Any other questions about products? We'll spend like a couple minutes just talking about one or two of the other halachas before we finish up. And there's more. I missed a few that I didn't talk about.
Oh yeah, like dates and nuts.
So those are, you know, those are fine in terms of Pesach, if you know, just in terms of whatever bug issues would normally happen.
No, in terms of like roasted almonds.
So the ones like what is the on the? So it should say kasher Pesach on it, but some of them I think
most of them. But anything roasted in Israel is lechukin, yes.
Right. So I think, did we talk about this last year?
So
I think we checked into this last year. Right, so that's you have to call them up. But I think the ones that we called last year, I think said that it was totally fine. Yeah, I think we said it was totally fine. They wrote it.
I assume it's the same. I don't remember.
No, it's best to call again, but if you're not sure, I mean, if you can't find out, then you probably could be making, if it's exactly the same brand, it says exactly the same thing. But because these things sometimes do change, meaning sometimes policies do change, you probably should call and find out. What did you say?
What could be the issue?
They explained to me on the phone. They said,
but they roasted with oil.
Oh, I see.
But I think there was that they said that type of oil was not kidneyos, but because it could be kidneyos, sometimes they have to write the kidneyos just in case. But really, it's not. I remember they gave us that. It's not what they said. They gave me a whole story about it. Right? They said it's totally fine, but they have to write it for certain policy reasons, which again is very individual. It means you can't assume anything for those kinds of products. You have to really find out. Right, so same. I think it was the same thing. He said it was totally fine, and there was some reason why, policy-wise, they had to write it just for some. Again, I forgot already what it was. I wish that you're. Maybe on my email have it, but not here. Yeah, you know, again, those things should always be checked from year to year and from product to product. I mean, sometimes you have to call. Again, in Osharad, they might know. If you ask the mashgiach there, one of the people that works there, that's.
No, because it was boxed. It wasn't.
Right. I see. So you have to call again, just to verify. But most probably, it's fine. But again, you know, every product can be different.
That's what I think it was problematic.
Oh, really? Okay. So that's how you have to find out, because it depends on the company, it depends on the year, you know, things change. It's hard to say exactly. So again, if you have any questions or people have questions, I'm happy to call people for you if you can give me some information of, you know, what revenue it is and just a phone number. You can call and find out. That's in terms of that. Okay, we're not going to go through the other things about, you know, dishwashing liquids and stuff like that. Toothpaste. In Israel, it's easy to get those things that are kosher Pesach. You know, almost every store has at least some that are kosher Pesach. I don't think you need it, but if you might as well. What the heck? They're all, half of them are kosher Pesach anyway. Why not use one that's kosher Pesach? Yeah, the reason why you don't want to make or a din, you probably don't need to. Probably don't. Maybe because it's probably not royal achilas kelev. Though they say apparently in this country that dishwashing liquid is not as heavily detergent included as in Chutz Laretz. At least that's what we found, that it's less detergent and more like water. Less concentrated, in which case maybe it really is not, it really is Brei Lachi Las Kelev. Don't test it at home. Don't make your dog sick. But we've heard stories, you know, so I can't say for sure, but it's usually assumed that dishwashing liquid does not have to be kosher LePesach, but we're machmir anyway, just in case, because it goes on your dishes and it goes on your utensils. So just to make sure we're machmir. And there's so many out there, there's no reason why you can't be machmir. It's easy to find. Same thing for toothpaste also. Toothpaste is not usually swallowed, so Mikra then is probably not Brei Lachi Las Kelev. Who's that? Right, I understand. But it's not supposed to be used as a food, so that doesn't change anything. Supposedly your dog wouldn't eat it, even though apparently some dogs have eaten it. But it's usually a similar kitten that most posts would say toothpaste does not have to be kosher l'Pesach, but we're machmir just in case because it goes in our mouth and et cetera, et cetera. And again, you can get enough that are kosher l'Pesach, even if it's a brand you don't usually like. It's worth it to be machmir for Pesach for a week, you know, to not have any questions. Okay, so if that's, we don't have questions on that. So just in 2 minutes, just mention a couple points about Erev Pesach, of Malach on Erev Pesach, and we'll stop with that, I guess, unless you want to continue. We can continue for a few more minutes. Basically, there's a halacha that you're not allowed to do malacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzos. It's mentioned in Mishnah and the Gemara, and that's the halacha. The reason why is because of the fact that that was the time that the Korban Pesach was offered. So because the Korban Pesach was offered in the afternoon on Erev Pesach, so basically we consider it to be a chag. It's considered to be a holiday. What the Torah calls Chag HaPesach, the actual Chag HaPesach, not Chag HaMatzos. And therefore, the Mishnah says that there's actually a halacha that you don't do malacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzos. The other reason why is just because we're busy with preparations for the night of the Seder, so we want to make sure we don't get too busy with other things. But the main halacha is because of the Korban Pesach, and even though we don't bring Korban Pesach anymore, the day, the afternoon, still retains its holiday status, and therefore you still would not be allowed to do malacha. The question is, what qualifies as malacha? And the answer is, it's not Shabbos, meaning you could turn on lights, you can cook, all the things like that. It's much more similar to the halachas of Chol HaMoed. Okay, which do have halachas, which you probably know, but not everybody realizes that. The Chol HaMoed does have halachas of what you can and cannot do in terms of going to work and, you know, very difficult things, complex types of malacha. What'd you say? Right, so that's what we'll get to in just a second. The rules are basically the same thing as Chol HaMoed. In terms of very specific examples, just like three or four different examples to mention quickly. So again, eating and, you know, cooking and things like that, driving for preparation reasons, that's all fine. The things that are more problematic might be taking a haircut. Most posts say is a problem because you have to get a barber to do it. A barber is somebody who's specifically trained. Again, if you cut your kid's hair, maybe you could be more makil, but in general, it's assumed that you should be machmir about cutting hair on Erev Pesach. In terms of shaving, for men, there are some posts that are makil for shaving because shaving is not considered to be something which is complex. Anybody, you know, most people can do it. So Rav Malavid in Pnei Halacha quotes Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, and he seems to say that it's fine because today it's an easy thing to do. It's not something which is complex, and therefore it should be fine. Many posts are machmir, though. Okay, meaning most of the classic posts are still machmir for shaving. The same way that you wouldn't shave on Chol HaMoed, you shouldn't shave on Erev Chol HaMoed, even though the reason is a little different. We're not going to get into it now because this is a women's shear, so rather than a men's shear. That's in terms of shaving. In terms of the other one or two things, I guess laundry is really the other big question that's relevant. Let me just see if there was something else that I missed here. We said haircuts, shaving. Yeah, sorry, cutting nails. Cutting nails, the post Mitzvah L'Chadchila, it's better to do before Chatzot, if you can. But B'diavad, it's, again, not a big deal to cut, so therefore, if you missed it, then you can do it after Chatzot as well. The big question is laundry. Can you do laundry after Chatzot? So almost all the classic poskim say that you cannot. That's considered to be a real malacha, and therefore you're not allowed to do laundry after Chatzot. Many of those poskim say if you start the laundry in the washing machine before Chatzot, then it would be permissible to let it continue because you didn't do anything. You started it beforehand, and then it's just running, and you didn't do anything after Chatzot. So that you can make it all about. The question is whether the whole thing to begin with is not a problem today at all. This is also a question because maybe you'll argue the whole reason why laundry was a malacha is because how did they used to do laundry? They used to sit there by the river and scrub the clothes for 3 hours. You know, it was hard work. That's the reason why, you know, housewives back in those days didn't have jobs, right? Today, you can do it. You know, there are obviously many people that don't have jobs, but there are many women that work, you know, and the reason why we have, you know, you can even think about working today is because of the fact that we're not stuck cooking all day and washing clothes all day, whatever it is. So basically because of that, there's a question that they raise, well, maybe it's not really the same thing today where you just put it in the washing machine and the dryer and press a button. Maybe that's not the same complicated malacha they were talking about when they said the laundry was usher. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is not sure about this point. They raise the point in Shmir Shavuos Kilchasa, and they're not sure. It's like Tzorach Iyun.
So many years already, you know.
That you do or you don't?
For me, it's more stressful not to do the laundry than it is to do the laundry. Like to see all the laundry building up, it's
right.
Very stressful.
It's right.
Putting in the machine is so much easier than to watch it build up.
So what are you saying? You're saying
something
that
something that I've asked this question every year. Like it's, but I understand. Like in
right.
The past, it used to be like a stress. You know, push a button. And
right. 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 So, again, it depends on who you ask. Again, most of the posts, even today, still say that it's at least a suffix. Which means, again, if you ask me, I don't know. Let me say it this way. Rav Melamed in Pnina Halacha, he says that it's probably fine because of this logic.
You're talking about Erev.
After Chatzot and Erev Pesach. Yeah. Chol Moed, everybody agrees, is not okay. The reason why Chol Moed is not okay, this is what I skipped before, is basically there's an additional point on Chol Moed, which is that you're not supposed to, meaning we want to make sure that you don't forget to do laundry before Yom Tov. Meaning if you say you can do it on Chol Moed, then people will say, well, I'll just leave all my laundry to Chol Moed. So that's what they say. Meaning if you're stuck for kids where you don't have enough clothes or they get dirty or whatever it is and you have nothing left, so then you could be more makil. And that's true, by the way, on Erev Pesach as well. But I shouldn't say that. I mean, some people say that's not true on Erev Pesach because it's only one afternoon. Maybe it's a little different. But on Chol Moed, you could make it if you need to, but you should try to wash as much as you can beforehand so you don't run into the problem. And if you have the problem, then you could be make it.
Wash for the Chag itself.
What'd you say?
If you need it for the Chag.
Well, that's the point. I mean, we want to make sure that the situation is such that you have enough for Pesach and you don't just leave it till Chol Moed.
I'm saying, it's not
Kolomo,
they wear white shirts every single day.
Right, so...
How many white shirts am I going to buy?
I understand, so you have to see. Meaning, if you're stuck and you don't have any left, and then you want to wear it, so you can make them wash one or two of them, maybe. But you should try to avoid it. Meaning, you should aim to not have to need to do that. But Erev Pesach, that, you know, you should really do it according to the Rishon Lezion, and it's a suffix at least, so, you know, maybe it's better to be machmer and to do it before Chatzot if you can. If you ask me, even though Ramalamit says that it's, you know, the logic that he gives is compelling, that today is, you know, you press a button and it's fine. Because it's not really a big malacha. Rosh Shlomo Zalman, basically, his doubt is basically that maybe it goes not by the action of what's done, but your intention. Meaning your intention is for the laundry to get washed. And the laundry getting washed is a malacha. It gets done not by you, by the machine, but the intention that you want to do something, which is a complex action, even if you're not doing it yourself, he feels maybe that's still a suffix. Again, the logic is not the most compelling logic in the world. But put it this way, if you're able to do it before Chatzos, most postmen seem to be machmer about it, so it's probably better if you can do it before Chatzos. If you get stuck and you for whatever reason, you can't do it before Chatzos, I would say there is what to be lenient about if you want to do it after Chatzos. If you need to be d'eved, that would be my take on it. But again, depending on who you ask, there's different opinions about this. That's in terms of washing. Any questions about malacha? Okay, last point. We'll end up. That is, it's a random point, but just in case it's not everybody's familiar with this. There's a question about putting chametz in your garbage can right before Pesach. Why is that? Because the garbage is often picked up not the morning of Erev Pesach, but a day or two before that. So the problem is if you have real chametz, which you put in your garbage can, and the garbage has already been picked up, then it's going to be in your garbage can, you know, on Pesach itself. And that's a problem, because the garbage can, even though the actual garbage can itself may belong to the Muatza or whatever, but it's in your property. It's on your grounds. And therefore, that's considered to be something which is still a problem. If it's in your property on Pesach and it's actual chametz, it's a real issue. So what do you do? So the best thing to do, number one, is make sure that you don't have actual chametz in your garbage can after the pickup date. This year, again, it's Friday, so probably they're going to pick up Thursday morning, like they usually do in Yad Binyamin, and they probably will not pick up on Friday morning. So anything after Thursday morning, be aware, is not going to be there. So either you could burn it with the burning on chametz on Friday morning on Erev Pesach, or you could bring it to one of the public, you know, public places, with the public ones, which are not privately owned. So those are a little bit better because it's publicly owned, it's not privately owned. It's still a question. Some postmen are still a little bit more machmir about that as well, because here in Israel it's Jewishly owned and there's still a question about it. But it's certainly better than putting it in your private one. And the other option is to pour some economica or pour some bleach or oven cleaner on whatever pieces of chametz. Again, we're not talking about like little crumbs now, we're talking about big pieces of chametz, like more than a kezayit, which is still edible, like noodles and Cheerios, there, like a lot of Cheerios and like that. So those you can pour something which will ruin the taste, oven cleaner, economica, something like that. You pour that on or pour it into your garbage bag and that'll ruin the taste. That's another option that you can do if you're not going to put it into a public place. You're not going to burn it. So that's something you could do also. But again, it's something that not everybody's aware of, just something to be aware of. That's a question that you know, that's ideally can be avoided, but if you're not aware of it, then you may not realize that's even something that's a problem. Okay. And with this, and if you have other questions afterwards, you can ask. But basically just, so, yeah.
About that, about this generally cleaning solution.
Yeah.
What makes something not a problem? Like, does it have to be...
Food, you mean, or...
Meaning, you said oven cleaner or economica.
Right.
So
right.
Can it be anything that's like...
Yeah, anything which will render the food not roi l'achilas kelev. I mean, the food will not be edible.
Anything that says that it's for cleaning bathrooms or cleaning
clothes. Probably. Oven cleaner, you're for sure won't go wrong. I mean, that for sure will do it. And the problem is also, I mean, with the other stuff, let's say if you're spraying it into a garbage bag, so it may not get on all the parts of the garbage bag, which in the end may not help you. If you use oven cleaner, it's strong enough that even if you spray it into the middle, there's a good chance it'll get around and, you know, it'll probably ruin other things in there also, so it'll be less of a problem, meaning it won't be as much of a concern as you use the other one. But if you use the other one, you spray it directly on the actual food, then you're right, it should be It should be fine if it's something which would, you know, ruin the taste completely. Again, in Roy Lachilas Kalev, that you wouldn't even want a chance giving it to your dog, I think. Okay, just to conclude with the idea that preparing for Pesach obviously is sometimes stressful and it's obviously a lot of work. But number one, the idea that it's important to remember that along with our physical preparations for Pesach, we're also supposed to be doing some spiritual cleaning and spiritual preparations. Meaning that when you're trying to get rid of your chametz, you're also trying to think about how to get some of the yetzer hara and some of your, you know, difficult, bad midos and maybe other things that you get addicted to in this world that are not, you know, not necessarily alcohol, but other devices and other things that are sort of, you know, taking up some of your time and you feel that you're enslaved to those things. You try to get those out of the way also, meaning not to throw it out, but to, you know, try to mentally to train yourself to be free of other things that are enslaving you and making yourself free mentally and spiritually as well. That's number one. And number two, the idea that the more preparation you do for Pesach, both physically and also spiritually and mentally, the more that you'll be able to appreciate and to enjoy and to feel the special kedusha of Pesach when it comes. So Bezrat Hashem, we should be able to get through the cleaning, the physical cleaning and spiritual cleaning, and still be awake when the Seder comes and be able to actually enjoy the Pesach holiday the way that it was supposed to be.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, yeah.